NPR.
Hey everyone, Cardiff and Stacey here. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. The story of the spreading coronavirus and its potential damage to the economy seems to change every day. So let's take a quick stock of the measures that U.S. policymakers have either put in place or proposed in order to limit that damage.
First, the Federal Reserve tried to give the economy a boost by lowering interest rates. The idea here is that lower interest rates make it cheaper for companies and people to borrow and spend money.
And for his part, President Trump has suggested that Congress should cut taxes, specifically payroll taxes, which would put more money directly into the pockets of workers. But Congress has not yet taken up the idea.
Instead, Congress is working on legislation that would spend about $8 billion to help state and local government agencies deal with the virus, contribute money to a vaccine, and to other measures that would help combat the virus directly.
Now, something that is both obvious and important about these ideas is that they are all reactive. They are responding to a growing problem. And they are necessary in part because of a vulnerability in the U.S. economy that is only now getting attention because of the virus, the country's public health infrastructure. So says Dr. Maria Sundaram, an epidemiologist and research fellow at the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University.
And it's because we don't like funding infrastructure. It's boring. And when it works well, we don't see that it has worked well. We only see when it doesn't work well. It's very, very important that we fix that problem of lack of preparedness, because it's right now we're seeing how the weak links in the chain are being exposed. And we can be certain that this is not the last epidemic that we will deal with.
Dr. Sundaram says public health touches every part of our lives, including our economic activity. And the coronavirus, because it is so contagious, has made this really clear. Some environments, she says, have an especially elevated risk of spreading the virus.
And in cases where people are at musical concerts, or like, for example, the NCAA tournament, where people are going to be cheering and yelling and talking a lot, that's going to be a really prime environment for the transmission of respiratory droplets.
Respiratory droplets, you mean coughing, right?
I mean coughing, but also, you know, people who are talking really loud or cheering can also spread respiratory droplets, so not just coughing.
Okay, so respiratory droplets are like when you're yelling, you're screaming. Sometimes you see, like, the spittle leave somebody's mouth. That's what you mean, that kind of thing?
Yes, although it doesn't have to be, like, such big drops, but that is kind of the biggest possible version of that.
Oh,
ew.
Gross.
I know.
Respiratory droplets. I feel like when I ride the subway, those are the two words that are now going to be just going through my head in a little cycle.
You're
welcome. Respiratory drop. Thank you. Thank you, Cardiff.
But already, a lot of companies are canceling their participation in future conferences and other events. Because for events like these, possibly the only thing that can be done to limit the spread of the virus is to cancel or postpone them altogether if the risk becomes big enough. You just lose that economic activity, at least temporarily.
But Dr. Sundaram says there are a lot of mundane daily activities where better health policy can help. Activities where people aren't yelling or cheering or spreading respiratory droplets, but there is still a real risk of infection. For example, eating in a restaurant.
The bigger concern about restaurants and the food and beverage industry in general is that the workplace practices for a lot of those companies in that industry are very much that if you are sick, you still need to come to work. And that is because your job security can be on the line if you don't come into work.
So that is one problem with the country's public health infrastructure, she says. Not enough people have paid sick leave, which means that if they do not come to work, they will not get paid.
And that brings us to today's Planet Money indicator, which is 27%. And that is the share of all workers in the U.S. private sector who do not have paid sick leave. That is almost 35 million workers.
And a lot of these workers have very low-paying jobs, jobs that are heavily concentrated in restaurants like waiters, waitresses, cooks. And they also include a lot of cashiers and people who work in sales and as healthcare aides. In other words, people whose job it is to interact with customers or patients but cannot take time off if they think they are themselves sick.
And that can lead to a downward spiral, because the more they show up to work, the more the virus spreads. The more the virus spreads, the worse the economy gets. The worse the economy gets, the more nervous these same workers will be about missing work. So they will be even more likely to show up sick and keep spreading the virus and so on and so on.
So that is one policy that Dr. Sundaram thinks would help. It's for more workers to have access to paid sick leave. Another policy would be to fix the way that the U.S. tests for epidemics. Other countries have been testing tens of thousands of people for the coronavirus. But so far, because of a combination of bureaucratic and manufacturing obstacles, the U.S. has been way behind.
Earlier this week, Dr. Matthew McCarthy, who works at New York Presbyterian Hospital, was being interviewed on CNBC, and you can hear the frustration he was experiencing because he could not get better guidance on who could be tested or even get a testing kit from the Center for Disease Control.
We hear that it's coming very soon, but I'm here to tell you right now, at one of the busiest hospitals in the country, I don't have it at my fingertips. I still have to call the Department of Health. I still have to make my case, plead to test people. This is not good. We know that there are 88 cases in the United States. There are going to be hundreds by middle of the week. There's going to be thousands by next week.
Now, in recent days, the U.S. government has been taking steps to make testing easier and more available. For example, by relaxing some of the criteria for people to get tested and by allowing more labs to use their own tests. But the delays mean that the U.S. has been losing time to fight the virus and that nobody has any idea just how many people have the virus in the first place. Dr. Sundaram says that anybody who is suspected of having coronavirus should be able to get tested.
That's something that we haven't quite yet achieved, and I hope that we'll achieve that very, very soon.
More ways to fix the nation's public health infrastructure right after the break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Microsoft Teams, where you can contribute to meetings from anywhere, chat with coworkers, and find all your files in one place. Ready to unleash the power of your team? Open Teams. More at Microsoft.com/Teams.
Support also comes from Capital One, brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. When you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase, your next trip is closer than you think. What's in your wallet?
Dr. Maria Sundaram is an epidemiologist at Emory University, and she says another big problem in the nation's public health infrastructure is healthcare pricing. It is often extremely unclear how much a procedure or a test is going to cost.
For example, in Miami, a traveler who was just back from China was feeling badly, and he wanted to make sure that he did not have the coronavirus. So he got tested for the flu to see if that's what he had. And he did. He had the flu. But his insurance company tried to bill him more than $3,000 for the ER visit and the test. Pricing for tests like this, when there is an epidemic, needs to get fixed so that people are not afraid to get tested.
The way that we set up paying for healthcare in this country is really not very conducive to a large-scale pandemic like the one that we're experiencing right now. So that's another really important thing. I believe that New York has directed insurers not to bill for coronavirus-related testing. So that will hopefully remove that disincentive for people in that state, and I hope that that is something that everyone takes very seriously.
So to sum up, paid sick leave, a better epidemic testing process, and healthcare pricing that makes more sense. These would start fixing some of the problems in the country's public health infrastructure and also potentially protect the economy from an epidemic. But Dr. Sundaram adds, not all of the responsibility for public health falls on our policymakers. Some of it falls on us.
If you are concerned about your risk, if you are concerned about the risk of your household members, wash your hands for 20 seconds. You can sing the happy birthday song twice. You can sing the refrain from Africa by Toto, which is my favorite. There are a lot of other things that take 20 seconds. Make a game out of it. Take it seriously. And know that that is, even though it is maybe really boring, it is the best possible thing that you can be doing.
Like the rains down in Africa. Yeah. And something don't ever think you ever had. Dun, dun,
dun. So you may not like the advice or find it boring, but wash your damn hands. It's not just good for your health, it's good for the economy. Do it for all of us. Not just so that we can have healthier lives, but also more prosperous livelihoods. Or just because you want an excuse to sing Africa by Toto? This episode was produced by Lena Sonsgiri and fact-checked by Brittany Cronin. Our editor is Patty Hirsch, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.